afternoon on the, what is it now, the 26th of October. Time here in the bunker in the undisclosed location deep behind the orange curtain from where Sam Nation operates. It's almost 11 o'clock in the morning, so here we go. We are following the late-breaking developments. The Make America Great Again bomber has been apprehended. Now, this is a term that was coined by the media, of course, eager to make this an issue with which to derail Trump. And Trump today turned the argument entirely on its head. I'll explain in a minute. So what do we know? Cesar Sayoc is his name. Some people are pronouncing it Sayoc. He is, by all accounts, a well-known felon. He has a long history of arrests going back to 2002. Those include theft, domestic violence, bomb threats, controlled substance abuse, evidence tampering, foreclosure, theft, and a probation violation. What's iconic about this is the van, right? The first images, because everybody here is trying to figure out, is this guy operating as a Trumpist? Is he a Trumpist? Is he a lib operating a false flag operation? So all of America took a deep breath to look for clues that would tip us off as to the motivations of this person. So the van is literally, he's got one of those white vans that is covered, littered. The windows are entirely covered with stickers and posters and slogans that at least at first blush appear to be pro-Trump. But the guy's a nut. He's a nut job in a nut van. And apparently pretty stupid because he got caught, you know, what is this, 48 hours later. 3 days. Now, Trump, moments ago, was at the White House. He was speaking to the 2018 Young Black Leadership Summit. And here is a short excerpt of his remarks.
I've instructed authorities to spare no resource or expense in finding those responsible and bringing them to swift and certain justice. And we will prosecute them, him, her, whoever it may be, to the fullest extent of the law. We must never allow political violence to take root in America. Cannot let it happen. And I'm committed to doing everything in my power as president to stop it. And to stop it now.
So here Trump, speaking to an audience of young African-Americans who are cheering, is explaining how he is going to do everything in his power to protect Democrats and the media from political violence. When you look at this from a persuasion perspective, because this isn't about pipe bombs. This isn't even about political violence. We don't even know if these pipe bombs were ever going to hurt anybody. The debate has gone beyond that. The debate is about political rhetoric. The debate is Trump, with his words, with his exaggerations, has incited, is the root cause of these bombs being sent out. The funny irony of this is Trump turns the entire thing around and reminds everybody what? Number one, that he is a law enforcement, law and order candidate. If you recall back to 2016, if you think to the tone and tenor of some of these more recent campaigns that are being run during the midterms and in the special elections leading up to 2018, the Democrats are the ones that are running on kind of an, honestly, many of them, on an anti-law enforcement platform. It's extremely incongruous for many of these liberals who are out there slamming the cops to then turn around and say, oh, we police protection. They're getting bombed. And then, oh, the FBI and local law enforcement. Thank you. Thank you. It rings hollow. Trump gets up there, thanks the police, and he goes on and further in his remarks. He specifically mentions the FBI, the local law enforcement, the fire department in New York. I mean, he's naming everybody who was involved in this investigation. And I predict, because this is a fast-moving news cycle, and I'm only coming to you here right now, I'm splicing in right in the middle of it. But I predict that Trump is going to recapture the momentum on this, or at least the narrative. And let me tell you why. Because as usual, the Democrats have overplayed their hand. Now, one of the most preposterous things that we heard this week on CNN, and this, by the way, you're going to say, Sam, please tell me what you think was so preposterous, because a lot of it was preposterous. But it's not what you think. John King on Thursday, folks, yesterday, is talking about this, saying no one is blaming the president. If you don't believe it, listen to this.
No one's blaming the president. Is anyone blaming the president? But the president now wants to make this about him. Amen to the president for what he first said yesterday. Let's take a breath. Let's everybody tone it down. Let's just see where let the investigators do their job. We can all be better. But then it's our fault. Why?
Who's blaming the president? Nobody's blaming. We're not blaming the president. And now Trump wants to make it about us? What? Producer Robbie stepped up to the plate, created this little montage. And mind you, think of this sort of as a buffet sampler, by no means an inclusive menu of the offerings preceding this preposterous statement by John King on CNN that he knows is false. Guys, this is an example, clearly, where he knows the words that are coming out of his mouth are a bald-faced lie. Here is the montage.
Last night, an explosive device was found at George Soros's Westchester home. You've got to point the finger back to the president.
All of the targets are people that the president regularly attacks himself.
We are living in an atmosphere where hate and violence have been not only incited, but condoned by Donald Trump. And there is no human being more responsible for the climate we're in than Donald Trump.
I was been texting with my former colleagues at CNN, and they're scared. And one former colleague said, this is what happened when the president calls you the enemy of the people.
That's right.
And I thought, my gosh, you know, the tone is coming from the top, and now CNN has become a target.
That was Sunny Hostin from The View, probably was referring to her phone call with John King. Yeah, King was probably telling her, this is what happens when the Trumpster's out there trash-talking us. And then he has the gall to go on air and say, what, us in the media? We're blaming this on Trump? Get a grip. There are 12 known packages that we know of right now sent to the Clintons, to George Soros, to Joe Biden, to Cory Booker, a senator from New Jersey, Eric Holder. That one was returned to sender. The sender, by the way, if you don't know this, on the packages was none other than Debbie Wasserman Schultz. No word if they used. They used her Sunrise, Florida address. They should have used her Pakistani IT department address as the return label. Maxine Waters got one. The Obamas got one. And the packages that were sent to CNN, this is the part that really, you got to understand, if you are watching CNN, they think, they are acting as if they themselves are under attack. Now, granted, they got a package, but it wasn't directed to a journalist. It was directed to, I believe it was James Clapper or John Brennan, I believe, or both of them were got their packages care of CNN. So it was really people that are not, I don't think they're employees, they're paid contributors, left-wing hacks, critics of President Trump, maybe fine semantics. But at any rate, if you listen to the media this week, they are acting as if they're under, you know, under attack. This is something akin to Hillary Clinton arriving in Yugoslavia under enemy fire, greeted by young girls holding a bouquet of flowers. Yes. And this type of exaggeration doesn't win. It, you know, the lie always runs out. And you can scream liar at Trump all you want, but he's outmaneuvering them here. What I try to do here is look at something what's happening in real time. We give you a perspective that's going to last beyond the shelf life, the immediate shelf life of your average podcast. So most of what is said on air and on podcasts tend to kind of flit away right away. It just kind of evaporates. It's a knee-jerk reaction, people usually talking about things they don't understand. And consequently, you take a show like that, you listen to it a week later, and it's, you know, it's largely irrelevant. If I can plug the show here for a second, I'm telling you, you can listen. I was just talking to somebody, a listener who was looking through their podcast and listened to a show from a year ago. I said, Sam, it's actually really relevant. Everything you said in it more or less has happened, has come to pass, and, you know, it was good perspective, and it's still current. They're getting outmaneuvered. The press is too smart by half on this, right? They are getting outmaneuvered because they think that they're going to create a very simple, neat package narrative. Trump is bad. Trump is saying bad things. Trump saying bad things is motivating others to act violently. Ergo, Trump is inciting violence. The logic doesn't work because in a robust, free country where we have political differences, where we have a First Amendment, we have to be allowed, right? We must be allowed to air our grievances publicly. One thing that any good constitutional lawyer will tell you about the First Amendment is there are so few limits on freedom of expression that you really have to be in virtually inciting immediate harm to somebody for your words to be, let's say, blocked by the government, right? Immediate harm. There's a tremendous amount of latitude that our founding fathers gave freedom of speech, political speech in particular, and that latitude has continued to be given by courts over and over again, reaffirmed, right, over the course of time. And why? The media doesn't care about Trump inciting violence. The media wants Trump to shut up. The media wants to silence Trump. And the only reason they want him to shut up is because he's being effective. He's the first Republican to come back at them, fighting, swinging. And he's managed every single time to turn the narrative back around in their face. If you are a guy, a talking head, a liberal, you know, nitwit at CNN like John King, you don't like that. If you're Joe Scarborough, Mika Brzezinski at MSNBC, you don't like Trump coming back at you. You're going to call him names. You're going to look, he's inciting violence. But the violence inciting, you know, it's good for the goose is good for the gander. And we're going to call it how we see it here on the show. And the fact of the matter is there is an incredible amount of violence inciting going on the other side of the aisle. And nobody's talking about it, certainly not at CNN and MSNBC. And you do, well, what do you think? Do you think Steve Scalise was essentially shot by Bernie Sanders? You think the guy that shot up the congressional baseball game, diehard Bernie Sanders guy, right? Bernie was out there, you know, saying, well, inciting a revolution. We got to take over this government. The guy took it too literally. He went out there with the rifle, starting picking off people in government. In some worlds of strategery, they call that a decapitation strike. Okay? You start going after congressional leadership like that. No sane person can sit there and make the argument that this isn't, you know, this is Bernie Sanders doing. But we can't attack, of course, the hypocrisy that they're allowed to use this kind of language and get away with it scot-free while Trump is up there fighting back, taking, you know, fighting fire with fire and essentially getting talked down for not being presidential. Every time you hear the media say that wasn't presidential, Trump is not being presidential, think rope-a-dope. That is what the media wants Trump to do. That is what every good conservative Republican that stays on the reservation does. They sit there, act presidential, and take the hits one after another, and they don't fight back. That's the kind of president, quote unquote, right, the media wants. When we come back, give you some examples of what I mean here. If you don't believe me, if you are a skeptic of these liberal shenanigans, then stay tuned. Maybe I can convince you otherwise. Sam Murgiovsky back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Murgiovsky, rarely wrong, but always right here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Here is, just for your listening pleasure, another montage, this time of elected representatives or former representatives of government. This including Hillary Clinton, Maxine Waters, former Attorney General Eric Holder, Cory Booker, current senator, and even the notorious Nancy Pelosi, all talking about the fight with the opposition. And this is the language that they have been using. You tell me if you think any of this perhaps fits some of that nature and character that the montage last segment, the media blaming Trump for violence, might fit this the same characterization.
You cannot be civil with a political party that wants to destroy what you stand for, what you care about. That's why I believe if we are fortunate enough to win back the House and or the Senate, that's when civility can start again.
But these members of his cabinet, they're not going to be able to go to a restaurant. They're not going to be able to stop at a gas station. They're not going to be able to shop at a department store. The people are going to turn on them.
But Michelle Wood says that, you know, when they go low, we go high. No. When they go low, we kick them.
Please. Get up in the face of some congresspeople.
And if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them. And you tell them they're not welcome anymore, anywhere.
I just don't even know why there aren't uprisings all over the country. And maybe there will be.
No, I got a question for you. I wonder how many AM/PM markets Maxine Waters burned down during the riots. I mean, this is. Oh, I'm going to get in trouble for that. No, I mean, this is the kind of language that you use when you're inciting a riot. They won't be able to go to a restaurant. They won't be able to stop at a gas station because I've burned it down. Just kidding. They're not going to be able to shop at a department store. You know, that's a real downer, Maxine. Everything on that list I could live with, but now that you're not going to let me shop at a department store. Yeah, that's now there my whole life has just turned upside down. All right. And Nancy Pelosi, uprisings all over the country. Okay, now what does she mean? Now let's be charitable here. This is all political language. It's political rhetoric. I'm not going to be one of those conservative talk show hosts that sits here and says, look at this. This is terrible. It's not terrible. It's politics. Politics has been terrible from day one of politics. Everybody today, God, I'm going to sound like an old geezer. Everybody today thinks that we are at the some zenith, right? Peak of nasty political rhetoric. Unprecedented in tone and vileness, right? It's simply not true. If you actually studied a little bit of history in college instead of gender studies, God knows what else, your head would be at least somewhat removed from your rear and talking to people, not that people listen to this program. You guys are all brilliant and well-educated. I'm speaking of the people that you interact with at the water cooler, at work, the insufferable people that tell you they think they know it all, right? This is the worst ever. It's all Trump's fault. It's not. We've gone through periods of American history where, I mean, you know, in the 50s, Eisenhower, I thought everybody liked Ike. You know what kind of political rhetoric things that were being said in those elections? It was brutal. Truman. Oh, hey, yo, Jefferson versus Adams. You go back, you know, 10 years earlier. Just kidding. This is nothing new. But the reason I'm playing this montage, the reason producer Robbie went through the trouble of stitching it together, is to show you that they're doing it too. And that anyone who claims that the media, the media is just being objective and calling a spade, and we're just calling it the way we see it, and Trump is X and everybody else is Y, is BS. And if you need to know what BS stands for, email me, Sam@SamNation.com. And I'll get back to you on that. Don't go anywhere. More on this. Yes, I am going to talk about Megyn Kelly. Yes, you bet I will. Also, the caravan. I there is too much going on. And only 2 hours to do it in. Sam Rzhovsky, right back after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Rzhovsky. You'll find him very interesting. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rzhovsky here, Sam Nation, coming to you not so live, but very much alive. From deep behind the orange curtain, otherwise known as not Florida. I think as soon as news reports came out that the guy, the investigation was centering around a guy in Florida, I did hope that the investigators had more to go on than the obviously fake return addresses for Debbie Wasserman Schultz. you never know. But apparently they did. So at any rate, Florida, again, it's not fair because I have good friends in Florida. But, you know, you got a lot of weird people in Florida. Right? I mean, you can play the game, right? You say a crazy thing that happened in the news. Did it happen in Florida or not? And you're probably the clue to playing that game successfully is to err on guessing that the weird stuff went down in Florida. So add this one to the list. Okay, right before we took a brief break, I was telling you that politics has always been a messy, dirty, rhetorically nasty business. I forgot to mention, too, that if you watch Parliament in session in Great Britain, wow. I'm not saying they have fistfights break out, but they basically, in very kind, posh terms, they basically, you know, crap on each other on live TV. And they yell at the prime minister. The prime minister, every Wednesday, I think it's on Wednesday, does prime minister's questions. And the whole House, all the elected members of parliament, get up and they shout questions at the prime minister. And these questions actually inform our you know, oftentimes highly critical statements, and they get deeply personal. So here, this is why Robbie thought very quickly after last segment, and in the break found that Reason magazine, Reason.com, had produced a little tongue-in-cheek audio that we're going to play here in a second. And this is, they've taken actual words from newspapers, from real accounts that are contemporary to some, we'll say, more distant presidential elections, and play them for you here. They've actually turned them into sound, into like they had it made into a little TV ad to mirror how it would appear in today's media. So we'll play the audio for you. Listen to this. I promise you this is excellent.
John Adams is a blind, bald, crippled, toothless man who wants to start a war with France. While he's not busy importing mistresses from Europe, he's trying to marry one of his sons to a daughter of King George. Haven't we had enough monarchy in America?
I'm Thomas Jefferson, and I approve this message because John Adams is a hideous, hermaphroditical character with neither the force and firmness of a man nor the gentleness and sensibility of a woman.
If Thomas Jefferson wins, murder, robbery, rape, adultery, and incest will be openly taught and practiced. The air will be rent with the cries of the distressed. The soil will be soaked with blood and the nation black with crimes. Are you prepared to see your dwellings in flames, female chastity violated, children writhing on a pike?
I'm John Adams, and I approve this message. Because Jefferson is the son of a half-breed Indian squaw raised on hoe cakes, and Hamilton is a Creole bastard brat of a Scotch peddler.
But you see, these are all actual words, actual things that were written from their respective campaigns. These are contemporary campaign materials. This is not BS. This is not theater, right? They've just been voiced and made in a contemporary way, how we would hear them if they were appearing on Sam Nation, let's say. So you tell me. And we're up in arms because what did DeSantis in Florida call Gillum? Let's not monkey this up. At least he didn't call him a Creole bastard. Jeez Louise. God, we're way more sensitive now. That's the problem. Sam Murjofsky, back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Murjofsky, Sam Nation. All right, let's switch gears here a little bit, talk about Megyn Kelly, and give you a little inside view into this. Approaching this from a media and business perspective, because the two are, this is really a lot more about media and business, and maybe with a dash of careerism, than it is about anything necessarily political, right? What you have to understand, if you don't know what's going on, Megyn Kelly was doing her show. She was doing it live. They were talking about Halloween costumes. And she basically said something to the effect of, I don't know what the big deal is about blackface. Now, blackface is something that's just not cool anymore. We know this. The idea of a white person putting makeup on and imitating the look of a black person is not okay. And this dates back to minstrel shows where you know, white performers did this, and it's just not done anymore. It's not cool. And Megan sort of stepped in it by saying, "Look, this, you know, I don't really get what the big deal is," and all hell broke loose. Next day, she was on air giving a tearful apology. Clearly, it was something that was crafted by the network. They humiliated her, frankly, and then shortly, I think it was later that day or very next morning, took her off air. And by the end of the following day, word had leaked out that she was being terminated. Why? first and foremost, you've got to go back and understand where Megyn Kelly came from. Megyn, if you recall, was given life by Roger Ailes. Now, I know there was some Me Too harassment nonsense going on. I don't know. Neither you or I were in the room. I've heard different things from different people who were there at the time at Fox. I'm not going to sit here in judgment and tell you Megan's right or Roger was right or whatever the deal was. But what I will say is that Megyn had a loyal following at Fox. But Fox was cable. Now, I know you're a listener. Listen, you're listening to this show. You're a special person because you listen to the show. Yeah, you're heads and shoulders above the rest. But the point is to you and I, we really only live in cable. ABC, NBC, CBS, do you watch those? Hell no. But when you live in Manhattan, and listen, this is so key. When you live in New York City, when you're Mr. or Mrs. Fancy Pants, the elites there, to them, cable is dog crap. I mean, cable is cable. Cable is like, is off brand. It's new money. But if you are at NBC, if you're at CBS, if you're at ABC, that is a currency of legitimacy. And Megyn made the fatal mistake of setting her sights on a network. She wanted to be in one of the big three. She felt that she was too big and too great for Fox News. And whenever you do this in your career, remember I explained this is part, part media and then part business and careerism. So she made a business decision. If you think her going after Trump was her sincerely held personal beliefs and da, 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 it wasn't. At the same time that she went after Trump, she went after Roger Ailes. At the same time she went after Roger Ailes, what else happened? She wrote a book about her troubles, her trials, her tribulations. She made this big stand against Trump. What happened? Trump won. That was kind of bad news for her and others that staked everything on derailing that. But the bigger issue is it was all a ploy, right? Everybody that knows her will tell you that it was all a ploy to kiss up to the liberal establishment. That's what this was all about. And the liberal establishment wanted her, and it's my opinion, I think they wanted her in order to destroy her. I don't know if it came from the top, but certainly nobody at NBC, none of her colleagues wanted her. From day one, there were these stories about how Al Roker and I don't know who else, all the talent there felt displaced by her and called her a diva and this and that. And maybe she is a diva. Granted, they might have had a bit of jealousy over her contract. But a real issue is that she wasn't one of them. The left routinely, the liberal establishment routinely makes overtures to conservatives to wobble them, to compromise them. They lure them in. Sean Spicer, great example. Look, I'm going to go a little long here because I want to finish this thought. There are many examples of people that are getting beaten up for being conservative, and Megyn was one of them, right? She was on Fox News. I don't know what he was doing to her in his office, right? But she had a boss that supported her, right? At least professionally. On Fox News, saying what she wanted to say with an audience that adored her. Now, for whatever reason, she sees it as a career opportunity to move over to the big boys, right? And they pay her an insane amount of money, right? 60, 70 million bucks, which FYI to NBC is nothing, right? It's a peanut. You and I buying a Snickers bar. So they give her this great job because what do they have? She is the single biggest threat over at Fox News to NBC. She's likable. She's beautiful. She's conservative. Non-PC. I mean, sinking Megyn Kelly and luring her, I'm sure, over lunches that took several years. And Megyn fell for the bait. She fell for it. She got entangled in this. And the net result for her, she's toast. Do you think she's going to go back to Fox? Maybe there's some talk about that. But this is what they do. Like remember, Sean Spicer, defender of Trump, comes out of there. He's been beaten and abused. He goes running to the major networks, you know, to trash Trump. And they use him for a hot minute and then dump him like trash. Why? All they needed from Spicer was a week or two, a month or two, whatever it ended up being, of negative press on Trump, see his own people stabbing his back, and then discard. Done. What conservatives never understand is overtures from the left are a one-night stand. That's how they're looking. If you're a conservative and you're getting a liberal mainstream media network is out there luring you, think of it like Tinder or Grindr, depending on your orientation. I mean, that's what it is. They're not looking for steady long-term relationships, because to them, you are always an outsider. They want to compromise you. They want to write you off, finish you off, done and done, and move on, because that's their agenda. So watch how this plays out. I think that she's going to get a large chunk of that money that they owe her. It's a contract. They're letting her go. They're going to try to argue that that she violated her contract by basically becoming unmarketable by virtue of what her remarks were. I don't think that's going to fly. So they're going to pay her the money. And I don't think they really care. That's the God's honest truth. Back right after this, Sam Rejofsky on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rejofsky. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
And one more thing about Megyn Kelly that I think bears mentioning is the show, her show that they put her on, doing the Megyn Kelly Today, wasn't successful, right? And that's, you know, there's a lot of opinions out there right now that I think are fair, saying and NBC is just looking for an out because her show commercially, right, economically wasn't faring well. But I just want to remind you, when you have a network, when you spend this kind of money on talent, and when you want that talent to succeed, networks will make changes. They'll move people around. They'll make it work. They'll say, look, maybe Megyn isn't good in a Today morning, you know, show, fluffy segment show type of deal, right? Maybe she needs to go back to being, you know, a hard-charging legal analysis, political analysis interviewer. I think she did very well in that format, obviously had a proven track record of doing well in that format at Fox News. The fact that they didn't make that change, okay, either they're poorly run, which I ascribe to part of that theory, but the other part of it is they want her to fail. And it's for all the reasons that I mentioned earlier. All right, well, we come back. Immigration, big freaking story right now. The caravan, the Honduras, El Salvador, Mexican caravan moving up toward the United States of America. My thoughts on this, large and small, up next. Don't go anywhere. You don't want to miss this. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Hi, Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, coming to you loud and clear from an undisclosed location deep behind the orange curtain. Dr. Audio, manning the controls, producer Robbie in the captain's chair, and I, your host, just chillin'. Reports came out 2 days ago that the migrant caravan headed for the United States, now some 7,000 people strong, had commandeered a train. Yes, they had found some sort of a freight train. And I saw pictures of just, I mean, it was loaded, loaded and loaded with people. I called it the poo-poo choo-choo on Twitter, which got me into some modicum of trouble. Look, I was born here. I was born in this country to parents who had to jump through an enormous amount of hoops to come here and then to stay here. Every step of the way, they did what they did legally. And coming to this country legally, those of you who've done it know how hard, how difficult it is. Now, if you have no idea, if you are, you know, eighth generation American and you are like John Kasich and just, you know, cry at the sight of a, disadvantaged child somewhere who deserves a chance at a bright future, fine and dandy. I'm going to speak to you in terms that you can understand. When my parents see this migrant caravan headed toward the border, here's the way they feel. They feel, and they haven't said this, by the way, you know, they're not big Disneyland fans, but I'm just going to tell you, I'm putting this in context, some way that you can explain to your friends how this works. You're at Disneyland. It's hot. Maybe it's one of those days where, you know, Anaheim, what is it, 100 degrees, 105 maybe. And you are standing in line. It's Saturday, right? The park is filled with fat, you know, gross people gnawing on those turkey bone ham legs, whatever those things are, eating churros with the sugar all over the sides of their faces, sweating, wearing things no human being should be allowed to wear outside of the house. And you, all you want to do is get yourself on Splash Mountain because it's 105 degrees and you feel gross and you just want that cool water. You want to get on that ride. You want to float on those logs and everything's going to just be zippity-doo-dah, zippity-day. So what do? You get in this line and what does it say? Standby wait time, 2 hours. Okay, I have three kids. I've done the Disneyland thing. Believe me, if anybody understands what a two-hour line feels like, I do. Add three screaming kids to it, a hungry wife, it's just the end of the world. So you're there in that line, and you're standing in that line. You're about midway through that line, and all of a sudden, a caravan of 7,000 people show up and cut to the front of the line. And what if you're on the ride already? You're getting off and you're like, man, that was just, wow, that was 5 minutes. And I waited 2 hours, but oh, that was great. And then you see a giant 7,000 person caravan getting right in the line, right there, cutting to the front of the line. You know what that is? That's BS. Again, email me, sam@samnation, if you want to know what that stands for. It's nonsense. And that is how legal immigrants feel about this, if you really must know. The purpose of immigration law is not to bar immigration. And at no point has President Trump said, I don't want brown people here. I don't want poor people here. I don't want immigrants here. Those are all fictions created by the media. It is not racist. It is not elitist. It is not nationalist to insist that people that cross the border be vetted. And looking at this poo-poo choo-choo of 7,000 migrants up from Honduras, Mexico, El Salvador, and elsewhere, perhaps even Afghanistan, Yemen, and Syria, looking at this, and they're all waving, what, Honduran flags? You think my parents showed up to be admitted to the United States of America waving a Czech flag? Do you even understand? Our friends on the left and our absolutely brain damaged colleagues on the right who think that we just should open the gates, you know, and I don't know, do you know, give them promise rings or something, you know, hey, now welcome to America. You're going to love it here. And it's when somebody is waving a foreign flag and they want to storm your border, I call that an invasion. That's not asylum. Asylum is somebody, hey, the place I'm from is going to kill me. Okay, the place I'm from sucks balls. So I'm coming over here because I want to be an American. I want the American dream. You're not showing up waving. I mean, well, you think Jewish refugees showed up in 1938 waving Nazi flags? Are you out of your mind? Do you understand how effing absurd this is? And I'm upset. I'm upset because I grew up listening to my parents' stories. And my mother emigrated once, twice, and three times, ending up in the United States. You want an immigrant? My mom's like a triple immigrant. She did it legally each and every time. She did it to participate ultimately in the American dream. My parents finally settled in California. They had moved if you average out their lives, they'd moved each of them, I don't know, every handful, every few years, right? If you just cut it up, certainly their adult life. They land in Irvine, California and say, this is the place, hallelujah, I'm not moving, and they haven't moved since. Even with all of the liberal insanity here. We have got to get a grip on this topic, and it is a topic that we are right on fundamentally, principles, legally. It is absolutely a winning argument. And whoever organized this caravan, because you don't just get, I know there was some talk show host, right, that incited the caravan to organize. But something like this requires money. And there were pictures and videos out there of volunteers handing out cash. Do I believe that some open borders person, a la Soros or whomever, is potentially funding this? Yeah, it's possible. Certainly. The timing of it is obvious. It's a political stunt. I'll tell you that and you can read this two ways. One, you can read it that there's, you know, somebody favorable to the Democratic Party that wants to see them do well in the midterms is thinks in their mind that the optics of poor, desperate people at the border being turned away from by Trump is bad for Republicans and good for Democrats. That's one theory out there. The other theory is that this caravan formed spontaneously. Led by this radio personnel. It's always, you gotta look out for the radio talk show hosts. They're the dangerous people. But that he got them together. And the timing, right? The timing is set to coincide when they think they're going to get to the border at a moment where it is least politically ideal for Trump to turn them away. So they have the greatest chance of being able to be admitted to the country. Both groups, both sides, both theories, whatever you want to call it, fundamentally don't get it. They don't understand that, one, Trump is going to seize this opportunity and show himself to be a law and order guy. They don't understand that across all the country, and even in some decidedly blue states, people do not like the idea of line cutting. Everybody gets the idea that when you wait for 2 hours to get on Splash Mountain, fair is fair. And you don't get to cut in line because of a political stunt. You don't get to cut in line because you are making yourself more pathetic than the guy next to you. And I believe strongly that this is an absolutely losing position for the Democrats. They want to keep, you can play this to the bitter end. But if Trump gives in, Republicans are toast. The number one problem with the midterms from the get-go, 10 months ago, I told you it was going to be a problem for the Republican Party to motivate, Trump voters to go out and vote for mediocre Republican candidates. Since I said that, there has been a coalescing behind Trump by the Republican Party. Trump has slowly but surely become the face of the Republican Party. Naysayers, Paul Ryan, open borders, Paul Ryan, where is he at? Nowhere. Lindsey Grahamnesty, right? He's on Team Trump now. Jeff Sessions, Mr. Anti-Immigration, love him or hate him on the Mueller stuff. He's the attorney general, folks. You want to talk about top sheriff? He's the attorney general. You got John Bolton with a key position, basically yelling at the Department of Homeland Security over the border issue. There's been a complete takeover of this policy by people who are dedicated to not having stuff like this happen. And this is what voters want. People voted for Trump because he said he was going to build the wall. The biggest problem Trump has is the wall hasn't been built. So if Trump sends troops to the border like Mattis said he was going to do, 800 troops, I think he's going to need a little more than that, but maybe they're bringing flamethrowers. No, they said no shots would be fired. But, well, that's really impressive. Let's send the military to the border and let's signal to this invasion force waving foreign flags demanding to storm our border. Let's just tell them that we're not going to shoot them. I don't know. It's silly to me. But the point is, as long as Trump doesn't lose his nerve, as long as Trump stays firm and doesn't let them in, it's a win. It's a win. It solidifies support with the base. And the swing voters, those voters that supposedly, the unicorns in the wild that you need to win elections, those people do not like the idea of line cutting. They just do not. So I think that's where this is going. Now, of course, the media is painting Trump as being a horrible person. Chuck Todd is going after the president's claims that there were criminals in the caravan. 7,000 people. Listen, people say Trump lies, and they give this evidence. They say, well, Trump's saying that there's criminals in the caravan, and he doesn't know that. How does Trump doesn't know that? He is just lying through his teeth. Well, listen, man. You take 7,000, I don't care. You take 7,000 nuns, you're going to get a few criminals in there, all right? So here's Chuck Todd on Tuesday claiming that there's no evidence of criminals in the caravan.
Keep in mind, there is no evidence of any criminals in the Central American caravan. But hey, don't let that get in the way of a good midterm strategy, apparently. A strategy that, according to the Washington Post, the president's advisors and political operatives say is to paint a portrait of a chaotic, dangerous world with Trump and Republicans as the panacea.
Now, so some reporters go down and interview members of the caravan, speaking to a man named Nixon Hernandez, who said this.
Criminals is everywhere, okay? It's criminals in here. I mean, it is, but it's not that many. I mean, it's good people in here trying to get through through Mexico and then get to the United States, but that doesn't mean that everybody's a criminal.
Hey, Chuck Todd, let me ask you something. Let's say that Mr. Nixon Hernandez here is a plant. He actually works for InfoWars. And his name is Bob Smith from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Let's just say for a minute that that's what's going on here. I saw with my own eyes members of this caravan climbing a fence to get into Mexico. Now, I got to ask you, is it illegal to enter Mexico illegally? Because if it is, every one of those clowns that was climbing over that fence that wasn't going through the gate, wasn't getting their passport stamped, didn't have a visa, is a criminal. So I don't, every time, oh, Trump is lying, he's lying. Okay, he's Oh, you're right. We didn't prove it in court. You're right. We do not have a guilty verdict, an adjudication of this issue. But give me a flippin' break, you bozos. And by the way, where were you? Where were you 5 years ago, 8 years ago, when Obama was saying the same thing Trump is? Oh, you think I'm making that up? We'll play those clips next. Sam Marjofsky, Sam Nation, back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Samuel Marjofsky here on Sam Nation, Sam Nation Radio Network. Friday afternoon, fast-breaking developments. So far, we don't know anything new about the pipe bomber, the so-called MAGA bomber, so-called by the media. The term began trending on Twitter before any evidence was in. This in and of itself became controversial. Because Twitter shuts down conservative topics that trend, but does not, as a rule, shut down liberal topics that might be, you know, well, let's say just jumping the gun and whatnot. Interesting observation, and there have been things said about that. Look, Twitter's liberal, folks. It's the liberal deal. Jack Dorsey, whatever his name is a left winger. They're all left wingers. Deal with it. Somebody needs to start a answer to this, a free Twitter that isn't censored based on content. And I predict it would be an extremely popular platform that would, of course, would be a place for liberals and conservatives and everybody in between. But anyway, those are my thoughts. Obama, back in 2005, was no John Kasich when it came to immigration, at least not in words. And here are his remarks on immigration. Yeah, like I said, back in 2005.
We are a generous and welcoming people here in the United States, but those who enter the country illegally and those who employ them disrespect the rule of law, and they are showing disregard for those who are following the law. We simply cannot allow people to pour into the United States undetected, undocumented, unchecked, and circumventing the line of people who are waiting patiently, diligently, and lawfully to become immigrants in this country.
Sounds like somebody running for president, huh? Sounds like somebody criticizing George Bush, who was a touchy-feely Republican letting people in across the border. Sounds like somebody who doesn't have any political persuasion necessarily for ideals, but is catering to what was then, back in 2005, a very popular attack against Bush. Fast forward to 2011, right? Now Obama is president, but he hasn't necessarily changed his tone.
Our nation has the right and obligation to control its borders and set laws for residency and citizenship. And no matter how decent they are, no matter their reasons, the 11 million who broke these laws should be held accountable.
Now, he's talking about giving citizenship or an amnesty, a broad amnesty to the people who came here to the country illegally. Again, speaking about line cutting. These, of course, proved to be largely empty words, although Obama did deport a number of people during his presidency, more so than any one of his predecessors before him. And still, I think even Trump today is not on track to deport as many people as Obama did in his two terms as president. So we'll, you know, keeping our eye on that. Nonetheless, why is a shrewd political operator, right? You say what you want about Obama, but this is a guy who knows politics, who's won a few elections, right? So you gotta give credit where credit's due. Why is a shrewd operator saying this stuff, right? Because Obama, I'm telling you right now, Obama doesn't say anything that he truly believed if he thought it didn't get him votes. And conversely, he's very happy to say things he didn't believe in order to get him votes. The reason and the answer is stunningly simple, folks. Obama understood what the media today doesn't. They don't get it. All the left-wingers, Nancy Pelosi, all these people, they're just stupid. They don't understand that middle America, I'll even call it politically unaffiliated middle America, swing voters, right? They don't like illegal immigration. These are people that follow the law. The most they probably do in their lives is run a stop sign here and there and maybe go in the carpool lane without a sex doll in the front seat. And that's like, that's it, right? I had to do that. See if you guys are still all awake in there. You guys were starting to fade on me. Clearly you are. They're panicking. They've got panicked looks. Oh my gosh. I'm going to get in trouble here during the break. But Obama, he gets it. He understood it. He knew that he had to have a tough on immigration rhetoric because otherwise he was political toast. So who's the idiot now? I think this is a very strong midterm issue for Trump, and all he has to do is hold strong on this. Sam Rzhovsky, back right after the break. Don't go anywhere.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rzhovsky here with a long-awaited Friday funny segment report. A newly released psychological study shows that some students are exhibiting symptoms associated with post-traumatic stress disorder, also known as PTSD, following the 2016 election. So they survey 769 students at Arizona State University that are studying psychology. That was their first mistake, right? Because have you ever known a psychology student that's like totally like level and reasonable? I dated one for a time, and that's all I'm going to say about it. So anyway, 25% of them reported experiencing clinically significant levels of stress after completing something known as the Psychological Assessment Impact of Event Scale. And this assessment, you know, takes into account the 2016 election and students' stress reactions to it. The lead researcher here, Melissa Hagen, who's a professor of psychology at San Francisco State University, said in a statement, what we were interested in seeing was, did the election for some people constitute a traumatic experience? yes, I am sure, Melissa Hagen, that for you, the election was a traumatic experience. You were with her all the way. When the clock struck 12 on one fateful day in January, you were out there in the middle of the street as President Donald J. Trump was sworn in, and you were probably screaming something like a pagan witch during a winter solstice festival. We have become a society of invented traumas. You know, we've gone from, in my lifetime, when I was born, people in their late adulthood had been to World War II, had served in Korea, had lived through some serious SH, you know what? You want to talk about, and these are PTSD, right? These are people who went back, got to work, focused, and built this country up into what it is today. And we talk about this millennial nonsense about, you know, safe spaces and all that stuff that goes on in colleges. We are raising a generation of total emotional losers. That's what we have on our hands. We literally are creating emotional cripples. And the reason is the more that we reward this type of victim status, right? Oh, I'm hurt. I'm damaged. I've been triggered. You're going to get more of it, right? There is a story about some dim-witted idiot in England at some university. There was a mural that was honoring hero veterans of the First World War, people who had left their homes at a very young age, 16, 17, fought in the trenches. World War I, we forget, was probably the most awful conflict, even by relation to World War II. I mean, it was a horrible mustard gas, bombs, and people running out there with no protection. It was a horrible, brutal war. These guys come back, get honored at this university mural. And this lady, this woman, this idiot student who's president of the students' union, getting paid for being president of the students' union, she says, "Well, if you don't get rid of this mural with white men, white guys, I'm going to paint over it myself." And you know why she's saying that? Because she's grown up in an environment where it's good to be triggered by oppressive racism and gender issues and sexism. It's good to be. The more oppressed you are, the more damaged, the more impacted that you are by all this stuff, the more the left looks up to you. Oh, look at this paragon, this example of virtuous damage. Virtuous damage. So all these people are getting interviewed about getting triggered by the election. They're all, yeah, me too. Me too, I'm triggered. I am worried about the future of this country. Maybe if we showed pictures of this kind of stuff to those people in Honduras, they might rethink wanting to be here. Oh, my gosh. Unbelievable. Hagan attributed the stress to the surprise surrounding President Trump's election and also the language used to describe race and identity leading up to the election. Give me a break. Sam Rejofsky back after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rejofsky here on the cutting edge of conservative values, perspective, and insight, delivering to you a condensed version of the week's news analyzed by me, your host. In San Francisco, which is the same place where that university professor is, that talks about poor college students getting triggered. And I don't mean poor as in economically poor. I just mean unfortunate, right? They're blithering victims being impacted, triggered by the election of Donaldus Maximus. This is the same place, San Francisco, where speaking of poo-poo choo-choos, where you can't go 10 feet without stepping into someone's excrement. And by someone, I don't mean Rudy or Bella, but I mean, you know, people on the street. They've got a great idea, a new idea, some new news out of San Francisco. They have found a way to be more inclusive. Now, starting here in November, non-citizens, illegals, okay, or people here legally on a green card, right? But, you know, wink, wink, right? Non-citizens, including undocumented immigrants, can vote in San Francisco school board race. So they're allowing, the city is allowing illegal immigrants and legal immigrants, but key thing is non-citizens, to cast votes in a local election. Now, I don't know if this is going to extend to when they have a mayoral election. like they did last year. I think they were at an election last year, a special election. No, sorry, I think it was a special election. So they don't have the mayoral race is not up right now. But they're going to let illegals vote in the city. Now, their reasoning for this is that illegals are stakeholders, right, in the community. They should have a say about who educates their kids. No, they should not have a... What is this? What is this? We're the only country on the planet that lets you get citizenship by virtue of being physically born on our soil. We take in more immigrants. We're an open country of immigrants. But we have a country that requires citizenship to participate. And San Francisco is turning this upside. I'll tell you what the reactions. Eventually, all this nuttiness. See, when you're a liberal in a crazy place like San Francisco, you have to keep upping the ante. Like, okay, if you're planning policy, you can't be the same old liberal year after year because there's somebody else that's going to come and they're going to outwoke you. You don't want to get outwoked. Wokefulness is a process. You got to be woking your way up the woke ladder to get to maximum wokeness. It's sort of like being a Scientologist and trying to reach that maximum level of clear. So in that sense, they're going to constantly outdo each other for new wacky ideas of how to be the most liberal place in the world. And sooner or later, I'm telling you, it probably already happened. People are going to go, okay, Emperor's New Clothes, that guy right there, he's naked. That politician right there, nope, that's too far. Because when people finally get, you know, even the liberals, when they realize that their $8 million apartment that they, you know, paid for in cash, granted, yeah, you know, they've got money growing on trees, tech money, whatnot, but they bought their real estate is going down in value because they've got a bunch of illegals voting for school board members and turning, you know, turning a school district into a mini Honduras. Okay. At that point, the parents are going to go, the citizens are going to go, excuse me, no, you're done. I'm woke, but not that woke. Maybe they won't. Maybe this comes to these. Then in 10 years, it'll be all people who got raised through these schools that, you know, safe spaces and trigger warnings. It's Tuesday. So my gender is right. I don't know. All bets are off. Don't listen to me. I'm just the old guy here on the radio. Sam Rzhovsky back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
You know, Robbie, you raise a great point. The Emperor's New Clothes parable doesn't necessarily work in San Francisco because clearly the little boy walking on the street says, Emperor doesn't have any clothes. He would actually be saying, the Emperor is wearing chaps. Or not wearing chaps. Or maybe they wouldn't even be that surprised because, you know, nudity is a thing there. They've got people defecating on street corners, and that seems to not be bothering anybody. So, who knows? Good point. Now, as speaking of Robbie, as you guys know, Robbie is a veteran. I served this country in Afghanistan in the Air Force. We were just having this conversation about all these triggered youths. And Robbie is a, are you a cusping millennial? What would you consider yourself? Are you the first? You're like the first at the, like, you're at the tail beginning of the generation, right? Yeah, right. He's an overdone Gen Xer, overcooked. But you know, going through college, you know more college grads that are deranged by the election than people, soldiers that were returning from Afghanistan and Iraq, right? And you run with veterans. You know people who've served and probably more than the average person here out in this area, and it's I can't even turn that into a joke. That's sad. It's sad that we've become this country that used to celebrate valor. We celebrated being tough. The part in the movie where Patton slaps the soldier who's a crying baby, it's not meant to be in the movie to show what a big a-hole Patton was. Right? I mean, I don't know. I always thought that part of the Patton story was meant to show that that Patton, demanded that people keep their wits about them. We all these young millennials, just wobbly, sensitive people, they all wear these shirts that are very popular right now, keep gaming and carry on or, whatever. All variations of the British slogan, keep calm and carry on, which was popularized during the war when bombs were falling on people's heads. And quintessentially British attitude was said, don't mind that old chap. It's just a bomb. Keep calm. Carry on. Right? I don't think that we can survive as a people, certainly not as a nation, if we don't develop some thicker skin. You know how hard life was 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 300? Speaking in evolutionary terms, in a very short period of time, we are making ourselves so sensitive that we are undoing thousands of years of positive evolution, where we're taught by virtue of rewarding the fittest among us to be strong, to be brave, and to let things kind of roll off of us, because the people that internalized everything, it didn't bother them, they died, they couldn't even make it in society. And instead, now we're putting all these people on life support and exalting them to places of virtue. I don't want to call these the final days of Rome, but got to do something about this. And I sense that there's enough opprobrium now to face this. So, all right. Great weekend. We're out of time. It was a fantastic 2 hours, as per usual. Send me some hate on Twitter. Send me some hate on Instagram. Send me some hate on Facebook. At Sam Nation. Sam Nation is the key word at all times, or words if you want to separate them and be cool. All right. Have a great weekend. Enjoy time with friends and family. Be safe. And I will see you here back Friday next week.